Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday School, July 8, 2012.
It is important for Christians to know their Bible. It is important for their own assurance. It is important for their own Christian living. It is important to be able to find your way around in the Bible and to know what it teaches. But it's also important to know about the Bible. And there's very much to know about the Bible, and illuminates the message of the meaning of the Bible. And so this morning I would like to talk a little about the Bible. First, I would like for us to consider the historical sweep of the Bible. It's one thing to read the stories in Genesis and to realize that they were a people who lived a long time ago in a strange society, and yet they were very much like we are. But to understand the whole historical sweep of the Bible gives a better comprehension of it. Think about how long 400 years is. 400 years ago, the pilgrims had not yet landed at Plymouth. 400 years ago last year, the King James Bible was first published. And think of all of the events that have happened since that time and all of the changes in this world, in the way people live, and so forth. Now let's think about Abraham. In most scholars think, in counting back the years in the Bible, we can assume pretty securely that Abraham was born about 2,000 years before Jesus was born. And in the 15th chapter of Genesis and the 13th verse, we read where God made a covenant with Abraham in this chapter. And he said to Abraham, "Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. The way it's worded in King James, it sounded like they would have 400 years of slavery in Egypt, but they didn't. From the time Joseph was there, and as long as that line of rulers was in Egypt, Israel lived a good life in the land of Egypt, and their actual servitude, as best can be discerned, is about 150 to 200 of those years. But from Abraham to Moses was 400 years. Now think of all the changes that has happened in these 400 years of our country, from a great wilderness, so far as Europeans were concerned, was considered home to the Indian tribes, who probably numbered less than the population of New York State now. And that would give some perspective of the time between Abraham and Moses. And all of the changes in the world, there were probably less change in Egypt than in any of the other countries. But then when we come to Exodus 12, we read, looking back of where Abraham was looking forward, in the 12th chapter of Exodus, and in verse 40, we read, "Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. So this was the full time of their living in Egypt. From the first, they were guests in the land. They were honored guests. And as it so happened, God arranged it so that they would be welcome in Egypt, because the Pharaoh of Egypt at that time was not a native Egyptian. He was, like the Hebrews, a Semite instead of a Hamite. And he was a foreign ruler over the native Egyptians. And his native language was similar to that of the Israelites. But then we read in the first chapter of Exodus that there arose a king who knew not Joseph. Historically, that is when there was a revolution in Egypt by the native peoples and reestablished the native line of kings in Egypt, and the Israelites were then very much foreign in the land of Egypt, and that was in the plan of God too. He sent a famine to drive them into Egypt in Abraham's day, and 400 years later, he enslaved them to get them uncomfortable with the comfortable living in Egypt they were used to, and willing to depart. God has a way of bringing about circumstances to make us willing to do His will. So it was 400 years from Abraham to Moses. And knowing that prepares us to expect an entirely different social situation, which we indeed do find in Egypt. We read that there were 70 persons, 70 souls, the King James says, but 70 persons who went down into Egypt to dwell there. And in 400 years, their descendants were so numerous that the Egyptians said they were filling the land. If that had continued, they could have taken over Egypt, but that wasn't God's will. And now consider another 400 plus years. In the 13th chapter of the Acts, and in Acts 13 and 20, if I can get turned to it, this was Paul's sermon in the synagogue in Antioch in Pisidia, which was now part of Turkey. In Acts 13 and 20, we read, "And after that," well, we read verse 19, "and when he had destroyed seven nations in Canaan under Joshua, he divided their land to them by lot. And after that, he gave unto them judges about the space of 450 years until Samuel the prophet." So when you read the book of Joshua, that is the events of maybe 20, at most 25 years. But then when you turn over to read the book of Judges, that one book covered 400 years of history. And it's a rather short book for that long time. And the number of names of the judges in there is 12. So 12 judges over a 450-year time. And some of those judges were contemporary, so there was a lot of time when there was no judge in Israel. There was a lot of time when they were subject to the Ammonites and to the Philistines and to others surrounding. But there was 450 years passed during the time recorded in the book of Judges. And that would bring us up to about 1,000 years before Christ, and most, at least conservative scholars, have agreed that the time, approximately the time of David's enthronement as king of Israel, was about 1,000 B.C. And so from Joshua to Samuel was 450 years. But then the kings of Judah, descended from David, ruled until the Babylonians destroyed the kingdom of Judah and took the Israelites into captivity and slavery in Babylon. And history is very certain on that. It was about 600 years before Christ. So from David until the destruction of the temple, the first temple, was another 400 years. And in reading through the kings, Samuel and the kings and the chronicles, you can see the great changes that occurred in Israel. And over 400 years, how Israel apostatized from the covenant of the Lord. When I was younger, I couldn't understand how that would happen. How, having seen all the wondrous works of God, they could apostatize. But remember, that was 400 years. And a lot of those things were, to them, buried in history. And I think we can look at our own country that is not at all anything like 400 years old, and we can see how the American people have departed from the, in large, from the faith of 400 years ago. When the settlers embarked for these shores to worship as they pleased. Then there was about 200 years from, well, there was seven, about 200 years from the time of the captivity in 600 BC until the return of the Jews and the building of the temple and the instituting of the sacrifices, and from the time of the later prophets, Zechariah, Haggai, and Malachi. This was because the Persians conquered Babylon and permitted the Jews to return to their homeland after 70 years of captivity in Babylon, which had been predicted by Jeremiah the prophet. And then it was about 130 years of their rebuilding the temple and their city and their country until the time of Malachi the prophet. So from the time of Zerubbabel and the prophet Zechariah until the time of the prophet Malachi was 200 years to about 400 B.C. And then from Malachi to the time of John the Baptist was 400 years. The Jews call that the time when the prophecy ceased in Israel. There was no prophet, there was no word from God in Israel for 400 years. And then we come to a very changed world in the New Testament. When John the Baptist came preaching repentance. Jesus came proclaiming the coming of the kingdom of God, the fulfillment of the prophets, and the new. It took the Old Testament from the 12th chapter of Genesis to Malachi, covered about 1800 years. And the Moses, who wrote the first five books of the Bible, wrote about 1500 BC. So the writings of the Old Testament took 1500 years to be written. 1500 years from now would take us back to the days of Rome. So the time covered from the 12th chapter of Genesis until the end of the Old Testament, beginning of the New Testament, was 1850 years. On the other hand, the writing of the New Testament covered less than 60 years. From the writing of the Epistle of James, probably the earliest of all, until John's Gospel and Letters and Revelation. So this book contains a sweep of two millennia to be written. There are 66 different works in this book that were written over that period of time. They were written by we don't know how many individuals. Some of those writings, we know who the authors were. Some of them we don't. And yet the marvel is individual pieces written over a period of 1,500 years brought together into a single canon, as it's called, everyone fitting together like a pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. And that is one of the marvels of the gospel, of this book that you have here. And next, what is the structure of the Bible? Our Bible is structured after the Greek Septuagint. The Greek Septuagint was the first translation of the Bible, of the Old Testament. It was translated from the Hebrew into Greek between 200 BC and 150 BC, more or less. And it was that Greek Bible that was the Bible of the apostles. Most of the quotations from the New Testament from the Old Testament come from that Greek translation of the Septuagint rather than from the Hebrew Bible itself. This was because of the dispersion of the Jews. The dispersion of the Jews in the East spoke Aramaic, not the Old Hebrew, but it was very close to the Old Hebrew, about the closest I think that we can compare Aramaic to Hebrew is like the similarity between Spanish and Portuguese. Those Jews in the West spoke Greek. So the Bible was translated into the Greek for the use of the Jews in Egypt and in Greece and in Rome. They, at that time, all of the books of the Old Testament were in separate scrolls. When Paul wrote that he wanted the books and the parchments to be brought to him, he was writing of all of the books of the Old Testament, each one in its own scroll. And this was a situation up until after the death of the Apostle John. These books were gradually collected into a collection, And they were called the scriptures, but they were in individual scrolls. And to this day, in the Jewish synagogue, they have an ark in the front of the synagogue in which are stored all of the scriptures in scrolls. When this, shortly after the death of the Apostle John, this kind of a book was invented, called a codex, when everything was brought together into a single book that we could hold in our hands. Thank the Lord you don't have to have numbers of scrolls in your home to have the Bible. You can have it in one book or in a number of copies in your own home. This was not true in the New Testament times. Everybody did not have copies of the Bible in their own home, and that's why the public reading of the Word was emphasized in the churches. But our Bible is divided into several divisions. The first five books are called the Law. They are called also the books of Moses, and they cover the history of Israel up to the time of their entering into the land of Canaan. And that contains the basic law of Israel as a nation. It was to be their civil law. It was to be their religious law. It was to be the whole life of Israel in the land of Canaan. Then we come to what are called the historical books: Joshua, Judges, Samuel, and Kings, and Chronicles, that relate the story of Israel up to the time of the captivity. Then we have the poetic books. The Jews call them the books of wisdom: Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. Then we have the prophets: Isaiah, Jeremiah, on through Malachi. Now, the Jewish division of the Bible in Hebrew is quite different. First, they had the Law, or the Torah, as they called it, which is the first five books, the books of Moses. Then they had what they called the former prophets, which was Joshua, Judges, the books of Samuel, Kings, and Kings. Those they called the former prophets because they were, they said, written by the prophets. And though it was the story of the kings of Israel and Judah, it was also the story of the prophets of Israel and Judah. Then they had the latter prophets, or the writing prophets, which was Isaiah through Malachi, which formed their book of the prophets. Then they had a third division, which they called the writings, or their sacred writings, which included the poetic books of Psalms and Job, reversed from our order, and Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, and 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and Ezra, and Nehemiah, and Esther, and then the four small books of Ruth, Esther, Lamentations, and the Song of Solomon. Now, this was the division of the books in the Holy Land. This was the division of the Bible that Jesus used. In the 24th chapter of Luke, In the last chapter of the Gospel of Luke, we read the delightful story of Jesus after his resurrection appearing to disciples on the road on the way to Emmaus. And we read, he opened unto them the scriptures. And he said, then he said unto them, O fools and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken, ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? And beginning with Moses, the Torah, and all of the prophets, the former and latter prophets, he expounded unto them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. And Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. And if you get a copy, an English version, of the Hebrew publication of their Bible as published by the Hebrew Publication Society, you would be confused because the book's arrangement is so different. Instead of ending with Malachi, it ends with 2 Chronicles. But then in the New Testament, we have the division, rather logically, in the Gospels, the Acts, the Epistles, and the Revelation. So this is the structure of this book. And there are many more things to be said about the Bible, about each individual book, and about the relationship of the books to each other. And there are good publications available for this in good Bible encyclopedias or in Bible surveys. One of the best that I know is the Bible surveys of Norman Geisler, emphasizing Christ in all of the scriptures. And this is the marvel of the Bible, that all the way through there is only one theme: the preparation for the Christ in the Old Testament and the explanation of the gospel of Christ in the New Testament. One of the very interesting studies in knowing the Bible and its structure and knowing about the Bible is to get a good list, and they are available, of the quotations of the Old Testament in the New Testament, and to see how the New Testament writers understood the Old Testament. For the best commentary on the Old Testament is the New Testament itself. And the study of about the Bible is a fascinating study, and it illuminates the study of the Bible, that is, of its contents, too. To know why it was that Israel was sent into captivity, and to know how it came about, to know why the temple was destroyed, and how it was rebuilt, to know how the temple that Jesus and the apostles worshipped in was different from the temples of the Old Testament, and who in the world was Herod anyway? Well, Herod, we find out, was a descendant of Edom, or of Esau, one of the historical bitter enemies of Israel. He was a descendant of Esau, but through the political machinations between Malachi and Matthew, he had come into favor with the Romans, and with one family of high priests, who was jealous of another family of the high priests, and he gained control of the country and favor with the Romans to be judged king of Israel. And what an irony that was, that an Edomite, a descendant of Esau, was king of Israel, or king of Judah and king of Israel, when the true king of Israel came. And it was King Herod the Great, who was that Herod who first gained the kingship, but it was his grandson, Herod Antipas, that was the king of Israel, the king of Judah, when the true king of Israel was crucified. There are many such ironies as this in the Bible, and there are many twists and turns, and it is fascinating to see how God uses and thwarts the purposes of men to bring about his purposes for his people. And to learn all you can about the Bible will help you to better understand what's in the Bible, and it is a fascinating study.